Our speaker tonight is Dr. John Cox. He's a native of Jackson, a clinical psychologist with over 30 years of counseling experience. He is a graduate of Ole Miss. In fact, he told me earlier he was actually born in Oxford while his father was in law school. He has a degree from RTS, and his doctorate is from the Rosemead School of Psychology in Los Angeles. He's married to his wife, Norma, for 36 years. They have three adult daughters, and he is the author of the book, Setting Parents Free. So if you would, please welcome Dr. John Cox as our speaker tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. I've never been introduced as an author yet. My book's been out for a week. Trust me, we'll talk about my book. Let's start like this. This is what I want you to hear. Isaiah 54, fear not, for you will not be ashamed. Do not be confounded, for you will not be disgraced. For you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood. You will remember no more, for your maker is your husband. Yahweh of hosts is his name. The Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer, and the God of the whole earth he is called. Just to put our marriage conference in context, your maker is your husband. I love Oxford. This is one of the most important places in my life. My parents met here. I was born here. I really committed my heart and my life to the Lord here in RUF. In fact, I was the first student at Ole Miss RUF that there ever was. So when you're playing PCA trivia and they ask that question, you know the answer now, okay? I found my wife here. I discovered psychology here. And my brother at age 27, when he was in journalism school, died here. This is an epicenter of my life. I am so delighted to be here with y'all. And I applaud you for being here on a rainy night and prioritizing your marriage like you do. Rebuilding your marriage. That's our title, right? I asked them if I could use John's five easy steps to hot, racy romance, but they said that that probably wouldn't be the best way to go. My hope is that this marriage conference is going to be a little bit different, maybe, than some marriage conferences you've been a part of before. I'm going to try to skip over all the things you can get in a marriage book, like, you know, getaway weekends and, you know, five meaningful touches, and men are like microwaves and women are like crock pots, you know, and I'm going to try to go a little bit deeper than that, you know. What I want to talk about is this. You know how you really want to be closer to each other in your relationship and you're not, or you really want to stop being snarky and jerky, but you are, and how you can have a conversation that starts out and you're like discussing car insurance, and like 3 hours later, one of you is saying, well, maybe we ought to just split up then, you know, and how does it get there, right? You wonder why you do that junk and how you can stop it. I want to give you some traction for that. This weekend, I want to talk some about how marriages work. I want to give you some categories for sort of understanding the junk that goes on inside of us that makes us act like total gizmos to each other, okay? Marriages do not grow by learning communication skills. I'm going to try to teach you what I think needs to happen for marriages to grow. So I'm glad you're here. This number down here is my Google Voice number. When we do Q&A, I invite your questions. However, at marriage conferences, sometimes people have questions they feel uncomfortable asking in public. You know, my husband's a total narcissistic maniac. You got any thoughts, Dr. Cox? You know, and everybody looks at him. So you can't say that, right? So you can text me a confidential question. All right. Now, I will prioritize questions in our group here because I want the community of us interacting together. But I will try to get to some of your confidential questions, too. All right. Norman and I have been married 36 years. We have three daughters who are all grown, don't live at home, have jobs, and that's on my resume. Okay. We now have a grandson and one on the way. So what I thought we'd do tonight is I have like 600-800 slides I want to show y'all, and we can do Q&A about that too. It'll be great. But Now, regarding my family life, contrary to what I'm sure you believe, my speaking on marriage did not begin by my wife saying, "Oh, honey, you make marriage so blissful and so amazing. You got to share your secrets." You know, like other wives are missing out. Like the husbands out there need to know what you know. That's not how it started. I promise you. She's actually given up believing I'm actually going to do any of this stuff I talk about. Really, I'm as big a knucklehead husband as the rest of you. It's just not going to sound that way because speakers always sound like they're amazing at what they do, right? In fact, a woman asked Norma once at a marriage conference, after the marriage conference, she comes up to Norma and she goes, "What must it be like to be married to him?" To which my wife tactfully replied, "You have no idea." But thank you, Norms. That's good. So let's get started. We got miles to go. We're going to overview tonight what I think are the four important pieces that you have to have working in your innards in order to make marriage work. We're going to look at two of them in more detail tomorrow. But first, I'm going to go ahead and tell you what I believe is the biggest problem in marriage. Okay? What I found is the real reason that people struggle. There's not going to be a big tantalizing buildup here. You're getting the high point of the show right here. And I'm going to tell you what's wrong with marriage just by telling you a little bit about what I do every day at work for the last 30 years. I'm a clinical psychologist. I do what you think I would do. I have a couch and a pipe and a sweater, you know. I basically do therapy, and I do conferences, and I write books. We're going to do this a lot tonight. I write books. But mostly I see adults. Anxiety, depression, OCD, you know, the works. And marriages, of course. Okay? Now, I don't know if many of y'all have gone to therapy before, but most people don't go to therapy just for kicks, right? Usually we go to therapy, we don't say, you know, "Hey, you know, it just sounded like it'd be fun. My family went to therapy every summer, just kind of wanted to get back in it." No, people go to therapy because they have an owie. You know, they got a boo-boo. Okay? In other words, they have some sort of a symptom or a problem, and that can be panic attacks or eating disorders or relationship woes or pick a card, any card. Now, here's the backstory to that. People get symptoms or have problems or can't manage sin in their lives not because they're lazy or stupid or have a disease or a chemical imbalance, okay? The real reason that people struggle or have symptoms or have marriage problems is this. Essentially, life is requiring something of them that they're not able to do. In other words, God made us in such a way that in order to make life work or be functional or have relationships or have a job or buy a car or have friends or serve God or be married, that you need a certain set of character abilities, like software, abilities in your heart that you need to be able to do in order to make work, to make life work, the ability to love, the ability to be strong, the ability to understand forgiveness, and we ain't born with them, okay? We need heart skills, in a sense. Doing marriage requires skills, like Napoleon Dynamite. "Hey, Pedro, you've got skills?" Okay, same kind of thing, all right? In a sense, being a human, functioning in life, relationships, whatever, is kind of like being a car. Think about it. A car has got to be able to do a lot of different things. It's got to be able to go, and it's got to be able to stop, and it's got to be able to turn, and blah, blah, blah. Mississippi, it needs an air conditioner. Now, imagine this car, but it doesn't have brakes. It's got a lot of abilities, but it doesn't have brakes. So it's driving down the freeway of life, you know, and everything's fine, until all of a sudden cars are stopped in front of it and he's pumping the brakes and he slams into the back of that Kia Soul, okay? Now, you want to stop, right? It's not like you wanted to hit him, right? But you don't have brakes. You're lacking something. So what are the brakes and the gas pedals and the steering wheels for humans? Well, think about it. Somebody gets married. Do they have the ability in their hearts, in their character, in their soul to be emotionally close? Did I learn what intimacy was? It's something we have to be taught. Or after the honeymoon, is it kind of me and my best friend, the remote control? Was I taught the ability to be connected? Okay? Do I keep going to destructive behaviors that I can't say no to? Can I not manage my impulses? Do I yell too much, drink too much, porn too much, gossip too much, whatever? In other words, was I ever taught the ability to manage my impulses? How about, can I stand up to difficult people in my life? Can I get in the face of the contractor or my boss or my jerky spouse and set limits? Or do I live with sort of one down anxiety with other people in my life all the time, kind of in that child position in the world? Were we taught that? Can we apprehend what it means to be forgiven? Can I make sense of failure and not decompose, not feel all judgy and bad about myself? Can I handle with poise when there's disappointment and pain? Okay, these are abilities that we have to have in order to do life. And here's the secret. Every one of us is missing some of these, okay? So let me tell you what the biggest problem in marriage is. The biggest problem in marriage is that when you put two live, screwed up people together, both of whom are missing some of the essential character abilities we have to have in order to do marriage, and they begin encountering the challenges that marriage absolutely requires to be intimate, to resolve conflict, to deal with failure, and guess what? They're going to be pushing on the brake pedal, pump, 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 trying to make something happen, and their car's going to go careening through the window of the Quickie Mart, okay? And that's not because they don't want to do it, or not because they're not trying hard, not because they're not praying hard about it. It's because we literally are missing some of the abilities we need to do relationship. What we're going to do tonight and this weekend is talk about what those abilities are, all right? So wife says, I don't feel like we're close anymore. And husband goes, gah. All right? Now, marriage problem, right? Maybe. Or maybe he never learned a lot about what intimacy meant, what it meant to be close. Maybe they didn't do that in his family. I saw a couple once, and I said to him, you know, I really want to help you guys develop more intimacy in your marriage. And the dude goes, awesome. And his wife goes, he means emotional intimacy. All right. Anyway, maybe it's that. Or... Or maybe there's something going on with what does she do when she gets closeness? Is there something going on there? Does she hold on to closeness? Is she needing to talk all the time? Is she needing close, 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 close all the time? Does she have an ability to hold on to love? I'm not sure. How about an injury? You're bringing up something from 3 years ago. I'm still hurting about that. Marriage problem, right? Maybe. But we're also going to look at the possibility that maybe he never learned what it looked like to really heal an injury when he created one. Or maybe she never really learned how to process forgiveness. These are abilities that we have to have. In other words, these are you problems, not marriage problems. So here's my point. We all come to marriage to this place that we've been told is the place where I'm going to get all these needs met, the fount of wonder, fulfillment and joy, not really realizing that doing marriage requires an enormous collection of these hard abilities I'm talking about. So we start running into things that we can't do, and we start running into things our spouse can't do, so things don't get done, and so we have marriage problems. And we go, oh my gosh, I knew I should have married that Sigma Chi, all right? But the problem is not with your marriage. The problem is that all of us are lacking some of these abilities, okay? So here's the good news and the bad news. Your marriage is not the problem. The deficits and the incompleteness that you both have are the problem. So here's the best news. Nobody's the bad guy. We're just incomplete guys, okay? Like I told a couple the other day who were talking about getting a divorce, I said, you know, basically what y'all are saying is we want to trade in the car. The car doesn't work. And my message to you is actually, I think the car is fine. You guys are just lousy drivers. In other words, you don't need a new car. You need drivers ahead, okay? So point one for John's marriage conference. The problem is that we're all lacking some of these character abilities, and we're going to talk about what they are. So here's the correct question, and the question I want you to start asking if you want your marriage to get better. How do I start growing together with you? How do we grow together to learn to do married stuff better? I'm not bad. You're not bad. We're both incomplete. Let's get busy. What do I need in my software? What does my heart need to understand love or to be loved? What are those abilities? You learn that, and you will enrich your marriage. So what we're starting with here is not a marriage conference. We're starting here with a you conference, okay? Now, this is going to do two nifty things. Number one is it's going to stop the blame, okay? Most marriages live in what I call a blame marriage. In other words, what's our natural inclination when we have a problem? We start doing what in my office I call he language or she language. You won't believe what he did next, and you can't believe she did, you know, and we live he language. And basically, we encounter a problem with our spouse, and all we do is hot potato, no, it's your fault, no, it's your fault, no, it's your fault. In other words, blame, which, by the way, never gets around to solving the original problem that started this in the first place, which is why you're still having the same fight you've had since college, okay? But that's a different show. Now, our default is blame. And we learned this skill from our dear mother and father, Adam and Eve. Think about it. What did they do when they sinned, when they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? What's the first thing they started doing? They hid. And then what happened? God comes and says to Adam, who told you you were naked? And Adam does what any self-respecting husband would do, right? He blames his wife. Okay? In fact, Adam blames God and his wife in one sentence. If you think about it, kind of a double shame, the woman who you gave to me, a double condemnation judgment whammy. And I'm thinking, that's pretty good for your first day as a sinner, you know? I mean, this guy's really taken to this. This it's like hitting a double as a rookie in the big leagues. It's like, this is going to, you know. Now, in case you haven't noticed, this blame thing is not going to doesn't get you very far, and it doesn't get you very much fulfillment in your marriage, and rarely does your spouse ever go, you know what, honey? You're right. I am the bad guy, okay? Right? So instead of blame, I want to start our marriages, and I want to start our conference with where the gospel begins, and that is we start saying, hey, let's quit the condemnation, let's quit the blame, let's deal with the problem of condemnation first. We both need grace. We both need to grow. We both help create this problem. We both have software missing. No one's the bad guy. Our junk is the bad guy. Okay? I tell couples all the time in my office that there's a good way to think about this. If you think about it, there's actually four people in every marriage. There's you, and there's her, and then there's little screwed up you, and there's little screwed up six-year-old her, right? Now, the two of you guys get along just fine, but then one day you come in and go, oh, we're having meatloaf again? Now, little her hears that and goes, oh my gosh, nothing's ever good enough for him. So she says, well, all you've been doing all day is complaining to me. And he's like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. And they go back and forth like that forever, okay? Now, the secret is you guys love each other, all right? It's these little scoundrels that are running around inside of you, okay? By the way, the first time I ever did this example, I used circles instead of squares. And suddenly it was a giant eighth grade boy joke, okay? So you can... These are squares, okay? They're squares, all right? Now, back to our marriage conference. But see the point? You're not the enemy. Your little junk's the enemy of you and me, and my little junk's the enemy of me and you, okay? So let's stop being enemies. Let's stop the blame and get on the same team to try to work this out, all right? Couples say to me, we had nothing in common. And I'm like, well, the fact that you both have contributed to the problem, and that you're both hurting and want the hurt to stop, you got that in common. In that sense, you're same and samesies, okay? Like besties, all right? So first step, just like the gospel, we got to make it safe to be screwed up, because you all are just like me, okay? Nobody's the bad guy. Now, number two, gospel doesn't stop with grace. It begins with grace. So yeah, it's safe to be screwed up. Let's start growing. Start getting Christ-like about it, all right? This is where we're going to go this weekend. We're going to talk about what's broken in us. We're going to talk about what keeps us from having a good marriage. We're going to talk about how we can grow there. And I want you to begin thinking about that as friends, not enemies, okay? Not that blame marriage, but what I call a growth marriage. So let's crank it up. What are these character abilities? What do we need to have ticking inside of ourselves in order to make relationship and marriage work? And as I go through them tonight, I want you thinking, huh, could this be one of my blind spots? Could this be one of the places I need to grow? And could this be one of the places my spouse needs to grow? And I want you to ask those questions in that order. You understand? You get it? Don't ask it about your spouse first. Get it? So what do we need character-wise? I call them the four I's. You know how they say there's no I in team? Well, there is in marriage. It's four of them, in fact. All right? We're going to look at them tonight. We're going to blow through them tonight. But they are about intimacy. Can I make sense of closeness and connection and belonging and oneness? They're about identity. Can I make sense of power and strength and being different from you and separate from you? Tomorrow, we're going to focus on intimacy. What does closeness look like in a marriage? And we're going to focus on conflict, which if I am me and you're you, you're going to have some conflict. Trust me. Thirdly, we're going to look at how we deal with imperfection, loss, disappointment, when you let me down, when I feel like I've let myself down, shame. And we're going to look at impulse control. In other words, what I do with my emotional world, all right? That's where we're going tonight. Let's get cranking. Intimacy. In other words, this is relational closeness, attachment, connection. And we're going to need to be able to go two ways with this. We're actually going to go two ways with every one of these. I'm going to call them, can I let you in and can I keep you in? Okay? These are two of the most vital abilities you need to make a marriage work. Now, what do we mean by that? What does let you in mean? Can I let you in? Think about what we usually talk about in day-to-day life. I met many of y'all. What do we say? We chit-chat. We talk news, sports, and weather. We say, you know, can you believe Trump's latest tweet? Or how about them rebels or sharks or whatever, you know? How's your mama and them, you know? Or we talk to communicate to solve a problem, give opinion. We need to stay on our budget. I think we should get a used car. That's where we usually live, right? We'll talk about this tomorrow. And that's valid, right? You got to make life happen. Okay, we're not building a commune here, but if that's all you do, if you can't go below the surface of chit-chat, news, sports, and weather, offering opinions and solving problems, there's going to be a real sense in which nobody's ever going to really know who you are, and they're not going to be able to get inside and know your heart. Can I let you in means, do you have the ability, did we learn, we have to be taught this, did you learn the ability to sort of reach inside and know what you feel, to understand what it feels like to be you, to communicate what it feels like to be you, and to care what it feels like to be somebody else, okay? That's all intimacy is with another human being, okay? It's not rocket surgery, right? We'll blow this apart tomorrow morning when we talk about it. But for marriage to be meaningful, we need to be able to go below the surface and touch the heart. That's what it means to let someone in. Now, this does mean something in the feeling realm, okay? Sorry, guys, okay? But hearts don't talk about the weather. Hearts say things like, I'm hurting, or I'm scared about that job interview tomorrow, or I'm proud of what you did at work, or I'm exhausted from dealing with the kids. Do you hear the feeling aspect of that? Real intimacy is going to have a lot to do with that. Do you hear the heart in that? God calls this abiding with him and with other people. He talks about its absence by saying things like, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. There's not that connection. You ever hear that from your spouse? So can I let myself need you? Can I talk to you about how much work stunk today? Can I try it on when you tell me about how your friend hurt you? Can I bring you my heart? Okay, when I was down there and I was talking about Oxford, my birth, my wife, my Lord, the death of my brother, did you feel that? You felt my heart, didn't you? I didn't start off by going, my name is Dr. Cox, and it's a pleasure to be with you each year. I told you my heart. That's what I'm talking about. You felt it. Okay, I let you know what it was like to be me, okay? So, I want you asking, how good am I at that? Is that a problem that I might have? And that doesn't mean you're a bad spouse, but it does mean some of the problems you're having in your relationship may be because you're kind of like a little shaky on this particular piece of software, okay? So if you didn't learn it, cool. We can learn it now. These are the problems in a marriage, not that somebody's the bad guy. Now, at this point, all the relational connecting types in the group are out there going, right on, this is what I was hoping he would talk about. Preach it, brother. My husband so needs to hear this. I'm elbowing him, making sure he's paying attention, you know. But intimacy for us relator types also means, have I developed the ability to feel loved and connected inside? In other words, can I keep you in? A legitimate problem with us relator types, and of course, I'm a shrink. I'm a relator type. You know, Norm and I are backwards, by the way. Men are from Venus. Women are from Mars. I'm the one going like, why are you always trying to fix me? Why can't you just hear my feelings? You know, can't you just turn off the football game and talk? You know, that's me, okay? So, anyway, intimacy also means, have I developed the ability to feel loved and connected inside, okay? In other words, can I keep you in? Legitimate problem for us relator types is, do we live our life needing to connect all the time and share all the time, and we need to be talking more, and if we're not, then is there a problem? You know, and for us, closeness is the only currency, and if you're not doing it, then you must be some sort of like you know, robot relator, you know, and that's how we treat you. Instead of going, hey, am I strong enough and powerful enough to hold on to love inside and not need you constantly reassuring me and be grounded? So yeah, part of love is sharing, the let you in part, but for us sharing types, often we're constantly needing that reassurance, and like, if we aren't talking, it's not okay, okay? That is as important a part of intimacy as opening up. We'll talk about that tomorrow. So let you in, keep you in. By the way, what happens when let you in and keep you in go on a blind date? It's love at first sight. All you need is emotional connection, and I have no idea what you're talking about. Cue the theme of Love Story. It's love at first sight, okay? Another, by the way, these are on a continuum. Practically speaking, you'll tend toward one end or the other, but recognize it's a continuum, all right? Now, if you struggle with either of these, which you do, that's cool in the gang, okay? We can fix that. We can work on that. Now, just admit that to your spouse. Start bringing that to your growth places. Quit fighting. Let's grow together, okay? I want you saying, yeah, that let you in thing that Cox was talking about, that's what you've been telling me, right? Yeah, I'm a bozo at that. By the way, you're a bozo at the other one. Let's grow. You know, that's where I want you, all right? Second eye. Identity. Separateness. Boundaries. Individuality. In other words, there's more to closeness than just attachment. There's also the issue of we may be one, but there's two people involved still, okay? There's more to relationship than candlelight and bath soaps and Adele music, okay? There's also the issue of individual identity, all right? Separateness, power. Now, again, we got two sides going here. Can I be me, and can I let you be you? Can I have room for sort of permission for you to be who you are? In other words, can we both matter here? What we call that is mutuality. And as you'll see develop this weekend, mutuality is as important as identity. I mean, as intimacy. In other words, intimacy says, can we be close? Mutuality says, can we both matter? And if you don't get those kind of singing together, it starts to create nasty little fruit in your marriage, okay? So we're starting off here talking about the peanut butter and jelly of the sandwich, man. These are the most important molecules that are in this, all right? So, number one, can I be me? This is the ability to know who I am. This is the ability to have a sense of what I value. This is, can I have my ideas and can you have yours? Can I say no? Can I be close to you yet different from you? This is power and sense of self. You know those people, and probably half of you are those people who basically aren't able to be them if other people don't like it. You know what I mean? And they're on every Sunday school committee because they can't say no. You know, they're, put them on your call list, all right? You ask them what restaurant they want to go to, and they're like, oh, I don't know, anywhere's fine, you know? They often live kind of controlled by their spouse and by other people. These people who don't live with a sense of can I be me often end up kind of in a one-down child position of the world. Is it okay this? Is it okay that? And we're kind of always needing mommy and daddy's opinion and don't want to upset them, all right? Now, to you, I say, in order to make life work, in order to make marriage work, much less your job, much less your parenting, we need the ability in our lives to have a seat at the table, okay? We need to be taught that it's okay to be me and that I can have a voice. I mean, children need to learn to hear no, right? But they also need to learn to say no. It's what they're doing when they're two. My two-year-old grandson, he says no a lot, but he's turned it into, like, he doesn't just go no anymore. He's got kind of a wind-up. Now he's going, no! You know, he's got to milk it for as much time as, you know. But we have to have this power thing or this sense of self thing, okay? I see people all the time in my office who come in and they have a lot to say about what a jerk their jerky spouse is, you know, and how this other person is always telling them how to drive or how to spend their money or telling them they aren't, you know, treating them well enough, and that's bad and everything. But one of the things I tell them is, as they're telling me all this he language, you know, what if instead of complying with them or being afraid of upsetting them or doing their bidding all the time and then later resenting it, what if you said to them, you know what, I'll discuss with you. I'll work with you here. But what I need matters too. And I'm not okay with you telling me what to do and then ranting if I don't do it. In other words, I say to them, and I know this is a brain teaser, but what if there were two people in your relationship? You may end up with the best marriage in Lafayette County, all right, if you had you in it, okay? And they say, well, I'll tell you what she would say if I did that, or she'll get really mad, and these people are living their whole lives without them being in the marriage. Can I be me? They're not saying, what is it I really value, okay? That inability to live your life out of your own sense of stewardship hurts marriages as much as the bully abusers do. We'll talk more about this. But if you can't stand up and set limits and be you in a marriage will dissolve right before your very eyes, okay? So this is a vital character ability, a vital thing that car needs to be able to do. Can you be you? Can you have a sense of self? All right, now this is not selfishness. Selfishness means only I matter. Biblically speaking, this is stewardship. If you were doing this theologically, this would go into the category of knowing who you are, knowing what you believe, knowing what you value, making choices based on that. This is Martin Luther saying, here I stand, I can do no other. This is when Joshua leads the people in the promised land. He says to them, choose ye this day whom ye will serve. Now, what's he asking them to do there? He's asking them to put a finger on their pulse and look inside. Who are ye? Ye, what are you going to serve? That's what we're talking about. You got to have a ye. Can I be ye? So, a lot of people don't know who they are, and that creates a lot of havoc in their marriages. And they say they have a bad marriage, but it might be that they're missing some pieces here, like themselves, okay? So do you see what we're doing here so far? I'm wanting to dissect your marriage. I'm wanting to dissect the way you relate to one another and show you how the pieces work and help you learn that you and your spouse both lack some of these things and you can both come together as friends and say, hey, let's grow together instead of beating each other up, okay? By the way, another version of the can't be me that I just have to touch on is passivity. The nice person sin. Basically, passivity is where I don't initiate in my life. Basically, I never proactively act according to what I value. So my spouse always has to pick up the slack. In other words, I'm too passive to call the plumber. She has to tell me. I'm too passive to clean up my own stuff. She has to tell me. She's the one coming back after the fight. She's the one having to initiate sex. and I'm never doing anything. And if that other spouse doesn't do it, guess what? It won't get done because you're passive. Now, this will make your spouse crazy. And let me tell you why, because it puts them in a double bind. Okay, you're passive and you're not taking initiative in your life. Now, if your spouse does nothing, then nothing will happen, right? If your spouse takes over and takes up the slack and fixes it, they're enabling you to be a passive person. So they're stuck, okay? Very destructive pattern. So if you're passive, take a look at that, okay? Which would require some initiative, which is exactly what you don't have, which is why passivity is hard to fix. But that's another show. Okay, so can I be me? Now, who do the doormats usually marry? They marry little Mr. or Miss Too Much Me, okay? Like, you don't like it, there's the door, okay? So the next question is, can I let you be me? I mean, that was a good slip. Because I'm one of these, I'm just going to go ahead and confess. I'm the I want it my way and I'll control things type. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. This question is can I let you be you? Can I let you exist in the relationship? Or is it all about me, 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 okay? The I can't be me people, they can't say no. The I can't let you be you people, they don't want to hear no. Okay? Get it? They don't want to bend the knee. They don't want to make room for other people in a submissive way. Now, of course, our sin nature makes this one tougher because basically the message of the Bible is that we're all born and hold a board meeting and elect ourselves chairman, right? So we're swimming against the current here a little bit because we're starting to talk about not everything being about me and my way, but this is super vital. I have a couple a while back, and basically this husband had literally never had anyone say no to him in his life. He was just the little prince in his family. So he was Machiavellian. He was maniacal. He wanted to run the universe. So of course, his wife is the one who ended up in therapy. You know, the kind of controlling jerks usually don't come to therapy. Their loved ones come to therapy. Okay, they're fine up there on their throne, but the people who they are, you know, who are their footstools usually seek help. So the only thing that will change this kind of marriage, because this guy's never going to come to therapy because it's like that's a bunch of psycho babble. The only thing that changes the situation with an oppressor spouse and an oppressed spouse, a controlling person, their spouse usually comes to therapy. The only thing that'll change that is to teach the oppressed spouse, the footstool, how to get powerful, how to be a me, how to push back on his jerkiness, and to have a voice, okay? So I did that. Well, that got him to therapy. He wanted to find out who this John Cox guy was, okay? And he was literally confused at her pushback, like angry and insulted, like, how dare you exist, you know? And he was, of course, enamored with me for teaching her this. But so the question for those of us who are the controlly, I like it my way types, as you can tell by now, I'm not a passive person. Our question is, how good are we at embracing your spouse's freedom and ability to be them and being different from you and disagreeing with you? I got a couple right now who, whenever she disagrees with him, he's like, oh my gosh, like you just like so disrespect me. Everything I say, you just tell me I'm wrong. And I'm like, no, she just disagrees with you. And he doesn't have a category for someone disagreeing with him without it being this affront, you know? So can we manage making room for other people in our relationships and in our lives? This is the spiritual ability of mutual submission. In other words, can I put aside my own agenda and bend the knee and submit to your needs too? Okay? Which reminds me of the joke. There's this guy, and he's leaving the house in the morning. He's got a job interview to be bank vice president, okay? And he's kind of nervous. And his wife meets him at the door and adjusts his tie. And she goes, honey, don't you worry. Know that you will always be vice president in this family. Now, hear me, you doormats. Us people who like to live in this controlling position in the world, we need you to set limits on us. Okay? We need you to not let us control you if this marriage is going to work. All right? We need you to set limits on us. We try to steamroll you. If a marriage with a controller passive is going to work, then the passive person has got to exist in the relationship, okay? When we begin a sentence to you with something like, why did you invite them to the party? Okay? We need you to respond by saying, wow, I'm not sure whether that's a question or a criticism. Which one do you think it is? Okay? Not your typical response, which is, oh, well, I thought y'all knew each other from work. And okay, you do that and we'll run your life and run the marriage into the ground. Okay? I want you to say, I don't think I really want to do the whole you criticize my choices thing tonight. But if you're really asking why I invited him, I will tell you. That is a good limit set on a controlling, jerky statement, okay? And we might get mad at you when you do that, when you don't comply with us, but you need to do that kind of limit setting if this marriage is going to thrive. I see this all the time. That's what this relationship needs first, not more love. It's the only way to have a good relationship with a jerk, an alpha, a pouter, a silent treatmenter, a criticizer, okay? You need to be ready to say, wow, you're really being critical, and I don't think I'm willing to interact with you if you do that. There's a whole marriage talk on that kind of thing. But this is why the stereotypical Christian response of, you know, when the wife lives with the bully husband, of just go back and submit better and try to be a more godly wife, doesn't work, okay? Growth for a controlling person, love for them, always means hard limits. I do this all the time in my practice. I cannot tell you how overlooked it is, all right? Now, to do that, you have to have a you, to go back to our first one, all right? And it will create some conflict, which we'll find tomorrow that conflict can be good, all right? I don't want you afraid of it. Now, if you can't do these things, so far we've looked at four abilities. If you can't do these things, cool, that's fine. But I want you to know what these abilities are. I want you to have some categories for what they are. And we can grow together, not as enemies, but as friends. Okay, by the way, if you are married to, let me put it this way. I'm presupposing in this conference that you are both repentant, that you're both willing to say, hey, yeah, I want to grow. It's partly my fault. Let's grow together. If you're married to an unrepentant, jerky controller like we were just talking about, and maybe they aren't even here tonight. I'm not going to that psychobabble conference, okay? Do not despair. We'll talk more about this, but marriages are like baby mobiles. And if you change one of the little, you know, things on a baby mobile, what happens to the baby mobile? The whole thing shifts. And even if your spouse is unrepentant, not willing to change, I don't care about all that growth stuff, if you commit yourself to learning about growth like this, you will change your marriage and your spouse won't even know why it's changing. I do it all the time. I joke with my colleagues that the best marriage work I do is individual therapy with one of the spouses. All right? So, we're about to take a break. I do want to plug my book. It's called Setting Parents Free. And it came out last week. It's not even on Amazon yet. And it is everything I know about parenting. And I've just been longing to write it down and contain it. And I'm very, very pleased with its result. And it's called Setting Parents Free. The subtitle is Helping Your Kids Get What They Need and Learning Where to Run When You Drop the Ball. Because in the parenting conferences I do, I hear parents have so much anxiety. Oh my gosh, I'm doing it wrong. I'm going to screw them up. So I wrote a book that did two things. Here's what your kids really need. I want you to know. And here's what to do when you screw it up. Okay? I want to set you free. That's kind of the point. Anyway, they're for sale on a book table out there. If you don't get one there, it'll be on Amazon in a couple of weeks. But I've never sold my book before. This is the first time. And I'm excited about it. So I would invite you to buy one. Now, it is 7 o'clock. The draconian leader is going to have us back in here at 10 minutes to start again. Mark, get set, go.